You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is the bike show.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 21st. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
Support for The Dirt Bag comes from KBOO listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And here beside me is Jim Gilbert.
Hi, Glenn. Nice to be here.
And we always appreciate our fine board operator, Ty. Well, we have got a varied show, as we usually do on The Dirtbag, a garden variety show. Mostly featuring edible plants. In fact, Jim brought some first of the season
Lateral.
I was going to make a pun there about the lateral falls, but you probably picked these.
I picked these. There were some falling, though.
Yeah, which is a good sign that they're ripening. Yeah. So I'll get to sample those a bit later. Which is part of what we'll be talking today is several things that we didn't get to last month, and one of those is when to pick fruit and produce at its peak for peak tastiness.
And that's one of the huge, huge benefits of growing your own.
Indeed.
Boy, so nice.
You don't have to rely on somebody else picking it. And for many things, in fact, we just noticed this. We've compiled lists before of what does not ripen after it gets picked. And we just noticed this out on the front table there for KBOO volunteers to snack on were some pears, both European and Asian pears. And the Asian pears had a tinge of greenness to them. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're going to stay. Mm-hmm. Unlike the European pears, which will ripen off the tree.
Yep. In fact, best to have them do so.
Even. Right. Yeah. So we have got, let's see here. We will talk about our plant of the month. And this is the time to start thinking about cover crops, and these are specifically nitrogen-fixing cover crops. Mm-hmm. Now, there are benefits for growing other types of cover crops, but nitrogen-fixing is a very good choice for the home gardener particularly. We will also, Jim, we'll talk about pruning prunus, or peaches and specifically in other prunus, in the summer or in the fall, I should say, mm-hmm. as we're getting there. We will also maybe talk a bit about preparing produce for storage. If you want to store potatoes or apples or squash, some steps that you can take now to help prolong its storage life. We've got a garden stumper at the bottom of the hour. And then we'll talk about harvesting at its peak. I forgot my glasses, Jim, so I can hardly read my notes.
And you wouldn't want to give them to me. You know, one thing we'll talk about, Oktoberfest.
Yes.
Momentarily, too.
Yes. So. And then I will, if we have time and we don't have the calls, then I'll talk a little bit more. I'll continue my little primer on honey from the hive to the bottle.
Mm, sounds good.
And then we'll get to our dirtbag dictionary term this month that we didn't get to last time, and then an update on the documentary.
Sure. Yeah.
And what I'm trying to understand this month, and this is because it's been in the news lately, and this is tipping.
Oh, tipping.
And I'm not going to get off on this. I'm just going to say that how did we get to this point where tipping, the employers don't pay? I mean, you know, restaurant wages are, you know, sometimes $2.30, and then they expect the patrons to tip for their.
Yeah, it's refreshing to go to Europe. And where they don't tip.
Yeah.
You know, they just charge enough money.
That's right. I don't mind paying the full price.
Yeah.
It's just that I don't like subsidizing a bad business plan.
Maybe next month I'll tell you something that about sort of in the same idea that remind me.
Yeah.
Because there's something that happens in Oregon that irritates me. That
okay. That'll be next. Okay. That's what Jim is trying to understand.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So if you have a question on gardening, we welcome your calls, 503-231-8187. That also will be the number to call if you would like to answer the garden stumper. And the person with the first correct answer will get a hand gardening tool sharpened at Coley Farm Store. Corner of 42nd and Alberta Street, Coley Farm Store. But first, what tool have you been using the most this month, Jim?
Electric chainsaw.
Still the electric chainsaw.
Battery-powered one. Yep.
Yeah, yes, yes, of course. We do like those.
Sadly, the sad story is that I'm removing dead apricot trees.
Oh, not because you've culled them. They've culled themselves.
They've culled themselves. But there are some left. So, you know, optimism springs eternal.
What do you attribute their deaths to?
Disease.
Oh, disease.
Yeah. Apricots are really hard to grow on this side of the Cascade. So
without any protection.
Yeah.
And that's what you're trying to do.
That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find a variety or two that we can grow with some reliability. And
Well, this reminds me, I usually listen to a book when I'm out for my morning jog, or plod, as I call it. And I didn't have anything in my queue. I've still got a lot of things that are held, you know, they're weeks away. So I checked out something was advice for living. And I thought it was going to be little essays or something, but this author, when he's 68, And he wrote down 68 pieces of advice for his young adult children. And they thought it was so good that he should do more. And so it's like 400 and some. and they're just short. Like, the tropics are always colder at night than you think it will be. So bring warm clothing. That's it. But one of them was, a failure is not a failure if you expected the failure. So there you go, Jim. You expect these trees, some of them, to fail, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's not a failure. You're learning.
Yeah. My partner Lorraine would say, well, it's data, to which I would say, well, you can't eat data. But
you're not going to try those ones again.
No, those are done.
I mean, yeah, you're not going to, it's more than data, I would argue.
So, Glenn, I got to tell you something else. So I spent 7 days at the Oregon State Fair, and one of the things that I have a bumper sticker I was giving out that says, no farms, no food. And then I would talk to people, and one of my favorite things to say is, you can't digitize food.
Mm.
So, you know, part of the whole thing of trying to grow apricots, well, I'd be wondering, you know, we're actually working with some people in the Dalles to plant some special ones there, and we'll probably do some breeding work there, because there we can keep the plants alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can have, hopefully, even, you know, some results.
Okay, well, I haven't, unfortunately, I have not been gardening too much in the last month, because I've been working on a remodel.
Mm-hmm.
And I've given myself a self-imposed deadline of Sunday to be done. I've been working on it 6 months, so it's time.
Are you going to meet the deadline?
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to stop then. It is where it is.
Windows in place or not?
Well, they make plywood.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll just spread some of that yellow dye number, whatever it was that they spread on the mice skin. Did you read this?
No.
It's the same dye that they use, that they color a lot of foods, but one of them is Doritos. And they spread it on the laboratory, a hairless mouse species.
Yeah.
And they can see right through the skin, and they see the organs beating and doing what they do.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, that sounds like I better throw away the rest of my Doritos.
Yeah. So I don't have anything. I mean, my hands, you know, by picking tomatoes and beans and weeds.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's about it. So, all right, let's move on here. It's time to think about cover crops. And if you have some fallow beds, it wouldn't be a problem to plant any of the cover crops right now. Mm-hmm. But generally, we want to get them in by, I would say, mid-October at the latest. But I thought I would just specifically talk about the nitrogen-fixing bacteria, cover crops. And the most common ones are the vetches, crimson clover, and red clover is also a legume, but it's a perennial, so that we don't really recommend planting a perennial cover crop. Fava beans and crimson clover. And there are others that, you know, alfalfa is a nitrogen fixer, but you know, for the home gardener, is not going to really be planting those. And most legumes are nitrogen fixers, but not all of them. There are some particular ones that just don't have it. And what they don't have are these bacteria, the rhizobacteria, that these plants will cultivate on their roots, and they take nitrogen from the air, an elemental nitrogen, N2, and they convert it into other forms of nitrogen that become available to the soil when the plant dies. Now, in the meantime, there is some benefit to the plant, but not as much as there will be afterwards. So they're great to plant now, let them grow until March, when you need the space again, and you can either turn them in, turn them in with a hand or by mechanical means. Or in what I do, and we can talk more about this, of course, in the spring, but I just cut them off at the tops, compost the tops, and let the roots just decompose in place, so I'm not tilling. It's kind of a no-till method. And then the nitrogen is right there in the soil where the next crop is going to be. So these are very cheap seeds generally for what you get. I didn't write down any of the numbers, but if per acre they can yield, 100 to 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And that's pretty darn cheap for the what you're paying. So, do it. My two favorites are crimson clover and fava beans.
And our favorite is common vetch.
All nitrogen producers.
Yeah. And what we do typically is we plant the vetch with a grain so that it can climb on it,
uh-huh.
which increases the volume of the leaf surface and all of that too. And it makes it seems like it's pretty happy that way. We just mowed our last year the vetch and triticale that we grew together. It was interesting because last year we didn't want to go through all the trouble of disking and replanting, and we didn't have time. So we just mowed it last fall of 2023, and we mowed it, and the seed all fell because some of it we had harvested, but a lot
That's
we didn't.
That's right. Yeah, remember that.
Yep. And then this spring it grew back.
It wasn't 100% harvest, but good.
Yeah, and we grew, and so it all grew back, and then we just mowed it again. Now,
harvest it too?
No, we didn't harvest it at all.
But it might be perpetual now.
Well, maybe. I mean, we'll see what happens next year. We might have to do something about some weeds that have gone in there, because there will be weeds occasionally. But but it looks pretty good. And anyway, it looks really good. And the plants that we plant in this, where we have planted them, have done exceptionally well. So
yeah, but it's not a legumer, but the veggies.
That's right.
Now I've been reading in the bee mags or articles that triticale is not a bad bee plant. Have you noticed honeybees visiting it?
I haven't paid attention.
I'm going to remind you.
Okay.
So next spring, or when it does bloom in the spring, I presume.
Yeah, it's late spring, and then ripens during the summer. It's one thing nice about this whole process is we don't irrigate at all. It just the natural. That's one thing nice about starting something in the fall, because it gets going. It gets all the rain during the winter, and the soil is moist well into the spring, of course. So the plant grows. They grow well, and then they go naturally. They naturally ripen and die.
Yeah, they also shade. Cover crops have so much benefit, But I'm just talking about the nitrogen benefit here.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we'll take our first musical break, but this gives us the opportunity here to talk about that we would welcome your membership. Mm. This time, our fall drive here is going on, and it's called, what is it called, Jim? It's right there in front of us. It's something has to do with Wake Up Neighbors. Wake Up the Neighbors. Yes. No, that's the last one we're going to do here. The first one we're going to do is actually called Wake Up Neighbor.
Oh, this is a song.
But our fall drive is called Wake Up the Neighbors.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But this, all my song, all the theme this time has to do with waking up.
Cool.
And so this is by Chris Yulden, who for the musicologists in the audience was a member of Savoy Brown, but on his own though. But this is from 1972 or something like that. All of these are pretty old, Jim.
Because
we are. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But if you can or need to up your donation amount, or if you want to become one, you can go to kboo.fm and there's a donate tab to tab on, or whatever you call that. All right, so this is Chris Yulden, Wake Up Neighbor.
Streets are battleground. pleasure then. All you're looking forward to is time for the next pill. You set your children concrete goals, philosophy full of hope, neglecting spiritual security. Wake up, neighbor. Wake up. Wake up, neighbor.
Wake up, neighbor.
I'm already awake.
Slap, 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 slap. Okay. Once again, KBOO.FM, donate tab. We appreciate it. The station appreciates it.
Yep.
I can't remember what the percentage of our funding comes from listeners.
They say 80% when I listen to it.
Oh, okay.
It's the station.
80%. That's a high percentage.
Substantial amount.
Yes.
Yep, and here we are. No commercial breaks, nothing, nobody influences what we say except us.
Well, you've got pretty good influence on me, Jim.
Oh.
Well, okay. Yeah. Let's see, what's next here? I wish my printer was better here, too. I want to hear about pruning of peaches and other tasks for getting ready for the fall.
Okay. Well, it rained this morning, last night
a little
bit. I was awakened by it, and I thought, wow, that's interesting. But what I was kind of... What'll happen with the rain, this is going back a bit to cover crop just for a minute, that rain is going to cause those seeds to germinate.
Oh, yes.
And that's nature doing its thing, which I think is just awesome. Anyway, so speaking of nature, in our climate, prunus, which includes peaches and cherries and plums and almonds and so forth, they're wonderful fruits and nuts, of course, but they're also a little bit more disease prone than some of the other things like apples and pears. So we at the nursery, we prune our prunus in the fall, or try to do it, because you can do it in the spring too, but the spring tends to, as we know in Oregon, springs can be long and it can rain a lot. And we're trying to get we want to do the pruning, and so the wounds will heal before the rainy season starts. So we're doing it now.
What's the timing? I mean, before the rainy, or when do you start?
Well, we start in September.
Okay.
Yeah. And the plant's going dormant now, and so we're not worried about new shoots. We want to do it. We don't want to start too early because we don't want new shoots to start and be tender shoots going into the winter. But we don't want it too late because we don't want to get into. We don't want to do it when rain is going to happen. I mean, not this kind of rain we just had, but I'm talking about days of cold rain.
So the rain that we just had now is not going to adversely affect it.
It would not be an issue. No, it's just like almost like going out and watering and just washing it off with some.
Okay.
I mean, it's not cold and it's not going to last for very long. So, and then the general scheme on a peach tree, for example, is you have a shoot that grew this year, and you cut that back about 2/3.
Right.
And that way you keep renewing fruiting wood year after year, and then of course if branches are crossing or there's too dense a growth, you can thin that out. But the basic idea is to do as much of your pruning as you can on the prunus this time of year, because it really does seem to make a difference for long-term health of the plant.
Okay.
And keep your pruner sharp.
And so this is hand pruning. You're not using the battery's chainsaw for this.
I hope not. No, it's all hand pruning.
And, yeah.
You know, it's good for your exercise for you.
Indeed.
You know, and normally you don't even need to use loppers. If you got some especially large branches that need to go away, you can use loppers. But hand pruner, then I might just mention that Bacco hand pruner is my favorite, and Pruner Warehouse, an online source, is a good place to get them. And I can talk about pruners someday more, but I'm kind of definitely a Bacco, B-A-C-H-O fan.
Yes, you've brought them in even.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. That's one task. Any other tasks? You cut down on the watering? I'll just mention one thing on the tomatoes. One of the thoughts or recommendations is to cut roots in August or stop watering. And boy, I don't do that. I don't do either of those because they'll keep producing as long as before you get a frost.
Sure.
And if you cut the water off, you're going to cut off your production.
Yeah, I mean, tomato is not going to overwinter, so it doesn't. When it goes, it goes.
Yes,
and that's that. With fruit trees, it's a little different, and I think there is good reason to stop watering about this time of year, maybe even a little bit earlier, but now for sure, because you don't want to have tender wood going into the winter. We did that with persimmons for a couple of reasons, but I've noticed that we actually stopped watering a month ago. And the plants are fine, but the wood is nice and hardened off now.
Oh, good.
So we're happy about that. Because we had a problem. The last year, I think we had 22 degrees in October. Maybe it was the year before. Also, we had an early frost, and the plants were too tender. We had some damage to them.
Okay. Any other tasks, fall tasks coming up?
Firewood collecting.
Well, you're already doing that with your apricots.
That's right. I look at them. They're a little small typically,
but I
have other ones that are bigger.
Yeah.
Other thing. Yeah, I mean, it's, harvesting is a big thing. And we've talked a little bit about when to harvest. And I've been eating Bartlett pears. You have too?
Yes.
Wonderful. I love them. And so my snack now in the afternoon is some Bartlett pear slices with some cheese and some crackers. Oh, man, it's so good.
Uh-huh.
Cheddar cheese especially is good with Bartlett's. So, yeah, and when we talked about how you know when to pick a pear, now Bartlett's are pretty much done for most people, most listeners, but there's going to be other ones, including the Asian pears. And, you know, because we talked about earlier about the benefit of growing your own and how getting them when they're ripe, when they really taste good. And my method is so simple. You just lift up on the fruit gently. If it comes off, it's ripe.
Yeah.
If it doesn't come off, let it sit.
And all pears, I think, benefit by being harvested. I shouldn't say all pears. All European pears benefit by being harvested before they are ripe.
Yeah.
They're green.
Yeah, could say
unripe.
Before they're ready to eat.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they come, a Bartlett, you know, for example, when it will come off the tree, as I described, it's firm. It's not good to eat at that point.
Right.
Put it on your counter in your kitchen. A week later, it's heaven.
And you'll be cued in by the color change.
Yep. Yep. It gets yellow.
Or red, depending on what your color.
That's true.
Red Bartlett. Yeah. Well, actually, it turns a little orangey.
Yeah.
And then red.
I haven't had a red Bartlett.
A red Bartlett, yeah, that's my favorite. Yeah, it's not just a Bartlett that's red. It's different. Uh-huh. I mean, they're similar, but it's a little sweeter even than a green Bartlett, or a regular Bartlett.
Okay, I mean, I'll have to try it one of these days.
Yeah, mine are all gone, so.
Oh, darn. Well, next year.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, my green-yellow Bartlett's are pretty hard to beat, so I'm going to try one of yours.
Yes, okay. I'll try to remember to do that. Okay. Am I going to remember that? No.
No.
You have to remind me.
Okay.
Okay, Jim, you know what time it is?
It's exactly, no.
Yes, 11:30.
11:30.
Yes, that means it's time for the Garden Stumper.
Yay.
Do we have the theme song ready to roll? Yeah. Not at the fingertips, anyway. Mm-hmm. Don't know when.
Don't know how.
Right. But don't know which. Don't know who. Is he going to get it? Well, it malfunctioned, he said. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'll remind Jim to think back what he asked about what the Latin name for persimmon.
Yeah.
And what does it mean?
Yeah.
That's the question. Yeah. I mean, I can't remember what it is.
Here, I can repeat the Latin name. Diospyros.
Yes.
That's the genus, actually.
Here we are.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, so the Latin name of the edible, this persimmon that we love to eat, not the Asian persimmon, I should say, is Diospyros kaki, K-A-K-I, the name for the American persimmon, which we also love to eat, is Diospyros virginiana. What does Diospyros mean? And this is one of my favorite Latin names, by the way, which I think people will understand.
We're going to have to give hints later on if we don't get any calls.
That's right.
We can break it down.
Yeah, Latin. And I have, yes, okay, I won't give any hint yet.
Okay.
Okay,
Diospyros. So the number to call, if you want to take a stab at that, 503-231-8187. That's also the number for a question, as well as the answer. So what does it mean? That's very good.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, well, let's take our second musical break here so we can tell you that we are in our fall drive once again.
Mm-hmm.
And we rely on the kind-heartedness of our listeners. It's all free. And if you don't want to or can't contribute, then that's fine too. We're happy to donate our time because that's exactly what we're doing. But if you can help fund the operations of the station, we would appreciate that too. KBOO.FM, the donate tab right there on the upper rightish corner.
And just to let you know, dear listeners, that Glenn and I, neither one of us live here. I mean, Glenn rides his bike over here. We have a lot of volunteers here at KBOO.
Oh, yes.
And we love what we do. And I get on the bus in Oregon City, ride the bus to the MAX station in Milwaukee, go Milwaukee by MAX to 12th and Clinton, and then I walk. I love the walk. It's probably close to a mile from there to the actual studio. Talking about this stuff is just makes me very happy.
Okay. Well, let's see. Shall we do our let's take our second musical break here, and this is from Magic Slim. I don't know much about Magic Slim. I should have done some more, but this is from a Blind Pig Records 25th anniversary album that I have. So this is called Wake Me Up Early. Okay, well, we'll keep going here. Magic Slim.
You have an amazing repertoire of music, Glenn.
I don't know how many hours I have.
That I never have heard before. That's great.
Well, I didn't hear them like they say on Performance Today. No, it's not Performance Today. What is that? That done all classical plays at 9 o'clock. Today in Music.
Hmm.
It says all music was once new.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
True. All right, Magic Slim. Tying right in with our Wake Up the Neighbor fall drive. Okay, let's go to the phone, see if we have a question or an answer. Good morning.
Yes, hi, good morning. Thank you for another wonderful and inspiring show.
Oh, great, thanks.
I don't have an answer, but I have two questions. One is about persimmons, a wonderful fruit that's about to ripen on our tree, and the squirrels noticed it. And as much as I love squirrels and believe they have a right to be here, as much as us humans, if not more, there's something a little annoying about those little teeth marks on all the persimmons. And I'm wondering, we have a few dogs that are barking at them like crazy, but short of tying the dogs over to the tree, is there anything to do? Put a net around the tree, you know, the leaves, or maybe put the fruit in paper sacks. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is also, I'm wondering, you know, I know about climate change, climate catastrophe, of course, but lately I noticed more like citrus fruit growing in Portland, banana trees. Have you noticed that also? I mean, it's kind of crazy. So just those two questions,
okay.
And thank you so much for a very excellent show.
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. So the persimmon, I'm pretty sure you could protect it with squirrels by putting bags over the fruit, paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
I think the squirrels probably, they certainly won't see the fruit, and I think that should work.
Sometimes you'll get oranges or tangerines or whatever in those mesh orange bags.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could put one of those whole things over several of the fruits.
Sure, sure. The other thing I've often thought about doing, our squirrels seem to be controlled by other creatures out at the farm, but if your tree is isolated enough so the squirrels can't jump on it from some other tree, if you take like a 2-foot piece of sheet metal around the base of it, it makes it really hard for a squirrel to climb.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't have persimmons, but there are some on my block. But what I rely on is the chestnuts ripening, because that's much more attractive to the squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll go to that rather than my fruit.
Yeah, good idea.
But, you know, you can't rely on that.
Just get a bunch of hazelnuts and
toss them out there.
Toss them around the plant.
Okay, we'll get to that call. And then he had a second question, which was about citrus and bananas.
Yeah, so there are actually hardy banana plants, but they don't really bear the typical banana like you'd get in the store.
Yeah.
Years ago, we used to grow them. And they're attractive ornamentals. And I don't even remember much about them now if we stopped doing that, because we've moved more toward fruit. But there are some hardy ones. I remember seeing in Mount Angel one that was a really, really beautiful plant. I think they die back in the winter typically, but they're hardy enough to come back up again. And citrus in our climate, typically you would grow it in a container and move the container indoors in the winter. I know Portland had some pretty cold temperatures this last winter. I think it was even colder than we got at one point out at the farm. When you get down into the low 20s, you're going to, if you don't damage the plant, you're going to damage any fruit that's on it.
Right.
So,
and all it takes is one night.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So while our average temperatures are coming up, we're still setting record highs and, well, more obviously record highs, and record lows.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So on days when you wouldn't expect it particularly.
Yeah.
So it's like the human lifespan hasn't gotten any greater, but there's a lot more older people.
Yeah. The unpredictability of the weather is what's pretty also an unfortunate part of this climate change phenomena, which is kind of frustrating.
Okay. Let's see. Did you say Jesse? Jessica, excuse me. Uh-oh. She hung up. Okay, we're still looking for the answer to the garden stumper. So you want to give a hint?
Sure. The word diaspyros is not Latin.
Okay, let's see if that helps.
It's in the Latin name, but it's not actually a Latin. Those words are not derived from the Latin, from language.
Okay, that's a good hint. I don't know what it means, though. All right. So let's see here. Let's just talk a little bit more about harvesting at the peak. We've talked about pears. Apples. What's a good time to harvest an apple? Because it won't ripen off the tree.
That's right.
And so is it the same pick up, and if it comes off?
Yeah, it's they don't come off quite as easily as a pear does. But,
you mean when they're ready to eat?
Right. So what they do still come off easier than they if they're unripe. You got to yank on them hard.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have to yank on them hard, don't do it. The second, I was doing some apple sampling with Lorraine in our breeding area, and. You know, you can sample an apple if you hopefully have more than one on the tree.
Yeah.
And if it's, you know, an unripe apple is hard and, you know, it's unripe.
Hard to get through it. Yeah.
It's not good. So, tasting an apple is a good way to find out its degree of ripeness.
If you have dozens to choose from.
Yeah. And again, it should come off fairly easily.
If there are windfalls, is that any hint?
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Sometimes windfalls are a product of coddling moth.
Yes.
So it won't necessarily mean that the rest of the apples on the tree are ready. So again, before you harvest the entire apple tree, check one out.
You're right.
Yeah.
Good tip, Jim.
Yeah.
As if that needed to be said.
Well, it was funny because it reminds me of an advertisement I saw in a fruit growing magazine for commercial growers several years ago, where it said, advertising a variety of something, probably a Red Delicious or something, said, looks ripe 6 weeks before it is, you know, so you can pick it, you know, and a lot of commercial growers,
they
want to store apples for a year in a cold storage.
You wouldn't want to post that in the retail outlet.
No, not at all.
Yeah. All right. Another benefit of homegrown.
Absolutely.
Just like KBOO.
Yep.
Okay. So let's see. What else in the fruit realm? Anything that harvesting this time, you know, strawberries aren't going to ripen after they're picked. So we'll just talk about what's harvesting now to harvest at its peak.
Yeah.
I'll talk about a little bit about squash, winter squash, not zucchini, the summer squash. Zucchinis are kind of edible from when they're small to when they're medium, and hardly edible when they're large. I mean, they would have to be peeled and seeded and ground up and baked probably. But for winter squash, I think it's probably too early now to be harvesting. I mean, you could harvest it if you wanted, if you just absolutely had to have it. But one of the best ways to tell, a couple of the ways to tell when it's ripe and mature, is that if it's sitting on the ground and you turn it over and the spot where it's been sitting is a brightish color, not dull.
Hmm.
Also, the thumbnail test. If you can easily put your thumbnail into the skin, the rind, it's not ripe, or it won't store long. So those are two. These, I guess, we're tying in on how to get for storage.
Yeah.
But we do want to harvest winter squash before the rains set in. So mid October is probably a good time to do that.
And I was thinking about plums.
Yes.
You know, where softness would be another indication of ripeness. Not a pear. You don't want it. Pears don't get soft on the tree.
Yeah.
You know, they fall before that time typically. But the plum is, when it's soft on the tree, then it's a good time to pick it.
My green gauge is relatively small. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be 8 feet across and 8 or more feet tall. And when they fall, it's pretty soft out there, so I can pick them up and eat them. If I pick them up every day, then they don't spoil. But the squirrels, they like to get up there too. But if there's not enough for my breakfast, for example, then I'll just shake the tree gently.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, three or four more will fall off.
Sure.
And then I pick those up and go. So
nice.
I hardly ever pick one off the tree because I'm disappointed when I do. Mm-hmm. They're just not ripe.
Yeah. And that's typically they're firm when they're still on the tree.
Yeah.
That point of ripeness, they get soft, and it's not too long before they'll fall. So you can pick them usually, you know, just if you feel around. I do a lot of tender.
Yes. Does it
testing.
Give under your a little? Under a little pressure,
but an unripe plum is not much fun. They don't taste. You know? not much point, and they don't ripen off the tree.
Right. Would you say it was a good plum year or average plum year?
At our place, I'd say it was good.
We had some. I mean, we had fewer, but I pruned hard on all my trees thanks to my battery chainsaw. We just had too much before, so I pruned off a lot, made it easier to pick and get them out of the way from where I walk. And I've got to pull that out again now to do that. Let's see, what else are we going to talk about storage? Potatoes? Yeah, good luck with that. You can, but it's hard to store potatoes in our climate here. You'd have to have more climate-controlled, maybe mechanical, refrigerators that are designed for that. Or more, tomatoes can be, but, they're individually wrapped type thing. Along with fruit sometimes gets individually wrapped there. I'm no expert at storage potatoes. Squash, I'm very successful, and onions too.
You know, what we should mention, Glenn, is sitting right here on the table are figs.
When to harvest a fig.
When to harvest a fig, absolutely. So I will open the container and I will show you harvested this morning figs, and the way
they are,
and a fig gets soft and droops when it's ripe.
Uh-huh.
Until that time, and it has to be soft and pretty droopy. Not, you don't want to let it get like totally disintegrating, but if you don't wait, if you try to pick it before that, it will be disappointing. A ripe fig is such a heavenly fruit, in my opinion.
And it's almost too late when it falls.
Yeah, typically figs.
They're so tender.
Sort of surprised to see these figs on the ground today under the Lateralia tree because maybe probably surprised that I hadn't picked them. But yeah, it's really good to pick them if you can because they're animals get in really quickly. Bees get into them. Ants get into them when they're too ripe. So, check them out. But a daily trip to your fig tree will be a pleasure to think about all during the winter.
Okay, well, that's about enough. We'll move on with our program here. Let's talk about the Dirtbag Dictionary term. Then we'll break for our last musical selection. And then, get an update on the documentary. But I think we need another hint.
Okay. So there's actually two words in the word diaspyros. Dio and pyros. And if anybody knows any language stuff, you probably can get pretty quickly figure out what language those words are related to. And then you might, if you have a moment, do a search.
We don't care how you get the answer.
That's right. I mean, we're not watching you.
That's right.
Whatever it counts, whatever way you come up with it.
Well, that reminds me of I can't even remember who maybe it was the comedian Stephen Wright, the deadpan delivery, and he says maybe it wasn't him, but somebody said we can tell a lot about by breaking down words, we can tell what they mean. So he said, take, for example, the word mankind. He says, we can break that into mank and eind, and neither of them make any sense.
That's pretty good. I like that.
But we're not doing that with...
No.
Dina...
Dio.
Dio.
Dio Spiros is the Latin name.
Okay, so pyros, does that have to do with fire?
Nope.
Okay, like a funeral pyre.
Well,
maybe that might.
I'm sure there's some roots somewhere that would indicate that too.
Okay.
But it does not mean fire.
Okay,
that's another clue.
All right, I'm not going to get the sharpening. Okay, adventitious shoots.
Okay, so I imagine that people have noticed when you cut something severely on a tree, it could be a big pruning cut, or you cut a tree down sometimes, or this can be other things besides trees as well, but adventitious shoots come from buds that are not visible.
They've always been there? They're just not visible?
They're always, well, as far as I know, they're always there. I mean,
okay.
They
don't form as a result of being...
No.
Okay.
No, they're a result that as the tree or the plant grows, these apparently, I mean, I can't say that for absolute
okay,
certain,
all right.
But I'm pretty sure that those buds form as the tree grows. And they don't develop into a branch or, you know, shoot until something happens above them. It's probably apical dominance might be part of the reason they haven't developed. That was probably another dictionary term, isn't it?
Yes, we've done that.
We've done that one, right?
I believe, I'll have to check.
Yeah. So apical dominance meaning that the top bud is the top guy, and it doesn't let the buds below it wait.
Which is why we get the typical kind of Christmas tree shape, short at the top and longer at the bottom. Branches.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because the hormone that is produced at the top of the tree, auxin, prevents the branches, close to that where it's being emitted, it prevents them from growing longer.
Yep.
And the further away you get from that, the less dominating it is.
And so obviously when you have a fruit tree that you want to have branches on, and you don't want it to be super tall, you tip it back, you tip it. You cut the top, the top shoot back so that it will allow buds below to grow and be formed branches.
Well, I've told you that I've been pruning, or I pruned last winter, this huge Gravenstein tree.
Yes.
That has these, you know, they're 14 inches in diameter, the trunks. There's multiple trunks, and I didn't have a chainsaw big enough, and I had got busy doing other things. So, by golly, they've shot out some of these adventitious shoots.
Yep.
So, I'll have to prune those off before, and I'll just get a bigger chainsaw. Do you have a long chainsaw, Jim?
I used to.
Yeah.
Now I'm just depending. I have my little battery-powered one.
Yeah. So, okay.
Okay.
Adventitious shoot. All right. Taya, you ready for our third and final musical selection, which ties into our fall drive here of Wake Up the Neighbor? And you can... Wake up! Wake up! Who used to say that? Tom Peterson. Wake up! Wake up!
I don't know.
Tom Peterson, the old advertisements on television?
For cars? No, you know.
Appliances.
Appliances.
Yeah, he'd knock on the... Because you had fallen asleep at the... Peterson?
I remember the guy, but I don't remember him doing Wake Up, so...
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's what we're doing. Our Wake Up Our Neighbors and asking them to become members of KBOO.
What if they don't want to wake up?
Well, they could still become a member. I'll just have to do it in another time. Okay, this comes from Chicago. One of my all-time favorite groups back in the late 60s, early 70s. They kind of lost their... They went more popish into the 80s. But they were a force to be reckoned with. Their first album was called Chicago Transit Authority, but that was the name of the Chicago Transit Authority. So they weren't able to use that name. And on their second album, they just went by the name Chicago. And that's the title of their second album, Chicago, self-titled. And that's where this one comes from, which is Wake Up Sunshine. Not Neighbor. Wake Up Sunshine.
Sunshine, sunshine. Let me feel your warm sunlight on me. Can't have you hiding. Night was long and night was cold, but today we're one day older. Sunshine, you make my life sunshine.
Had to let that trombone go in there a little bit.
That was nice.
I played trombone for 45 years.
That's amazing, Glenn. I played it for about half a year out my attic window in Portland when I was in grade school.
That's great for the neighbors. Speaking of wake up neighbors.
That's right. All right.
Yeah, so that song is close to... It's more than 50 years old.
Yeah.
It still sounds pretty fresh.
It's
though,
a nice song.
I like that, you know, that just a trumpet, a trombone, and a saxophone. Quite the horn section.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Okay. Well, now we have time for a little bit of a documentary update.
Sure. So it's a good an announcement that's very, very timely. Tomorrow at the Oktoberfest begins in Mount Angel, Oregon. And Oktoberfest has a reputation for things that I don't do, but it also is a great cultural event, including the theater there, the Mount Angel Theater Studio. And that theater is going to be showing the documentary film, An Oregon Story. And it's going to show the full-length version tomorrow, Thursday, at 2 o'clock. And also on Friday at 1 o'clock, and I will be there for both of those. And then it will do the short version on Saturday and Sunday. And I admit, I don't remember the time of the short version, so I'm going to put it on the website. Call my friend Joe Wilson once we're done with the show and ask him to put it on the website, anoregonstory.com. So if you can't make the Thursday or Friday events, you can go on Saturday or Sunday and watch at least the short version of the film, which is really good too. And anyway, so that's our theater showing for this fall. We don't have any other ones scheduled, but I'm pretty excited about it because you know, it's a nice little theater. Mount Angel would love to have you come and take part in the festivities, and it's not really late if those of you want to stay late and do what they do at Mount Angel for Oktoberfest, which I don't do.
I think I read, maybe it was a different one, but it possibly was this one, that they changed from October to September for this year first time in decades.
I think it's always been September.
Well, one famous Oktoberfest changed to be kind of more in line with maybe better weather and when others
pretty sure.
Okay.
This Oktoberfest hasn't been in October for a long time, but I could be wrong, but I
well, you live closer to that than me.
But it is definitely, I mean, September, you know, it's
okay,
kind of nice time
indeed. And it's, you know, we're getting our rain out of the way today apparently, and then back to normal temps.
Yeah, and okay. just real quick, So I spent 7 days at the Oregon State Fair promoting the film, An Oregon Story, and talking with people about the importance of protecting farmland. And I think just want to remind folks that movie, you can, if you don't want to go to the Oktoberfest, just go to the website, anoregonstory.com, and you can watch an amazing story about Oregon history.
All right.
And what we're doing now.
We're out of time. Jim, thank you. Ty, thank you very much. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your donations.
Great.
We'll be back live in 2 months, but next month's will be a recorded show. But a new one.
Talk to you soon, Glenn.
Be well.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.